Shannon Popkin recognizes a temptation she has when dealing with other people.
I have lunged after control in hundreds, maybe thousands of ways, and I can tell you that I have never been able to maintain control. It can't be done, and really, I just interject pain. I interject strife.
This is the Revive Our Hearts podcast with Nancy DeMoss Walgamuth, author of Lies Women Believe, for Monday, April 21st, 2025. I'm Deanna Gresh.
Well, I love how the Lord puts together relationships and friendships through the ministry of Revive Our Hearts and True Woman. And our guest today is... Well, Shannon, I've heard about you for years and years from our good mutual friend, Deborah Faisenfeld. She was Deb Showers.
Yes.
When you knew her in college.
Yes.
You guys go back. Well, actually, I knew her even before then. So I've known her a long time. She's known you a long time. And for years, she's been saying to me, you need to get to know Shannon Popkin. She said she writes and she loves studying the Bible and she's really gifted. And you have been writing for the True Woman blog for a number of years. So a lot of our listeners have read you on the blog. And if they haven't, they need to. I love the way you tell a story. I love the way you weave it into scripture. And finally... It's about time. We've got you in the studio today to talk about a new book. But before we talk about the book, I want to just say welcome to Revive Our Hearts.
Thanks so much, Nancy. It's really fun to be here.
And if our listeners have read any of your blog posts, they know that you are an energetic, vivacious, outgoing, storytelling, fun woman. So I think people are going to really experience that and enjoy that as we talk over the next two or three days. You've written a book called Control Girl. Well, just let's start with that title before we say the subtitle, Control Girl. Your husband teased you about the fact that he should be in the acknowledgments. Why was that?
He said that without him, I would just be going on in life thinking I was agreeable. Still, I wouldn't even realize I was a control girl.
So you were a control girl. And so this book is a little bit like autobiographical. Has it come out of your journey at all?
Yeah, I almost feel like the title's a confession. So yes, definitely. Definitely coming from my story.
You know, I remember hearing one publisher that I had a conversation with talking about somebody publishing a book on this subject of women and control issues. And somebody in that publishing house, not your publishing house, said, I don't know that this is really that common an issue among women. And I heard that and I laughed and I thought, how many women do you know? Because, and it's not just women, I think it's a human condition. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But you hit onto something, you've tapped into something in this book that as I was reading and I just kept going, ouch, yes, mm-hmm. Oh, yes, yeah, right, how did you know? But it's something that you've experienced so much of your life and yet you didn't realize that you were a control girl. Let's start. What is a control girl?
I think a control girl is somebody who wants to have and keep and maintain control, and she feels like she can be in control, and she feels like it's all up to her to keep control of everything, and she kind of forgets that there's somebody who already is in control, and he doesn't really need her help.
Wow. Well said. And yet, I think when we're trying to, you know, somebody would look on and saying, you're being a control girl. But I'm thinking, maybe you've thought it, well, I'm not really being controlling. I'm just trying to be helpful. I'm trying to, you know, make sure things don't get way off the track. I mean, we tend to think of those behaviors when we're in the midst of them as being helpful.
Yes, we have such good intentions. You know, we're only taking control because we care so much. We love these people that we're trying to invest in them, and we're trying to control the outcomes. But we, like I said, we just control because we love them. We care. We are invested in these situations that we're involved in. And we don't necessarily see it as a negative thing that we're taking control.
Well, now that you've been thinking a lot for a number of years about this controlling women subject, as you look back on your life, maybe even into your childhood, do you see now in retrospect some moments or instances where you say, wow, I really was a control girl from a young age but didn't realize it?
Absolutely. Yes, I wanted control. And, you know, in my relationship with my parents, I didn't want to submit to their authority. And in friendships, you know, I wanted to manage things and manipulate things and dating and all the different stages of life. But I would have never labeled myself as controlling.
Have you ever been called a perfectionist? Just curious.
Yes, I have.
I have as well. Areas. And I'm thinking, well, what's wrong with things being done right?
Yes.
So you didn't think of yourself as a controlling woman, a control freak. Sometimes you'll hear that term. Yeah. Let me just, by the way, I've got the book in my hand and I want to just hold it up here so people know what we're talking about. If they'd like to get a copy of this book, maybe for somebody else they know who has an issue with this. But Control Girl, the subtitle is Lessons on Surrendering Your Burden of Control. We're going to talk about that in a moment. From 7 women in the Bible. So you take these 7 women in the Bible who have more similarities to us in more ways than we might realize, and you pick out some lessons from them that have helped you and can help us when it comes to surrendering this burden of control.
Yeah, I think by looking at these women in the Bible, we also gain the vantage point of seeing what did God think of them as they were trying to take control? What did God think about their situations? And by looking into their lives from God's perspective that he gives us in the Bible, we can learn something about ourselves and we can gain God's perspective on our own control issues.
We were talking over lunch just before this recording that there was no shortage of women to choose from in the scripture. You chose 7. I noticed, I think they're all Old Testament women, aren't they?
They are. Yeah, I kind of got to numbers and I was out of space, so we could have kept going.
So all through the scripture, and God has given us, and the New Testament tells us this, that these things were written in the Old Testament as examples for us that we might learn from them, that we might not fall into some of the same traps that they did. There's much more that could be said about each of these women.
Yes.
A whole book could be written on each one. Mm-hmm. But you're doing it through the lens of women who tried in different ways to control their circumstances, their lives, the people around them, and some of what they ran into in the process of doing that.
There are so many warnings as we look at their lives. There are so many lessons. There are so many, like you said, mistakes to avoid and just new insights about ourselves and about God by looking at their control issues and considering our own.
But also ways that God redeemed those women and changed them and brought them to a place of surrender, which, as we're going to see, is the antidote, the cure for dealing with these control issues. So I love the example of these women. I love teaching women of the Bible myself. So I love how you've done this in this book. But you start with your own journey because that's what got you interested in exploring the lives of these women. When did you first start to realize, and how did you first start to realize that maybe control was an issue in your life?
So before I was married, I don't think I realized that I had control issues. I think because I could manage my little life the way I wanted. I was a teacher, and I would come home after work, and I would take a nap. I loved taking a little nap, and then I'd eat a little snack for dinner, and then I would go out. I was really, really social. So I was in Bible studies, and I was a youth leader, and I'd meet friends for coffee. And, you know, if you needed somebody to stay out until 1 in the morning and talk with you, I was your girl, you know, because I had my nap coming up
right
the next day. And then after I met my husband, it was my first time of trying to kind of give up some of that control. I would schedule our dates or our weekends top to bottom with social activities. And so he worked out of town and would only be in our town every other weekend. And so I would pack it full. You know, Friday night when he got off the plane, I had somewhere where we were going to be. And then Saturday morning and we were meeting other friends for lunch. And so after a couple of months of that, he said, time out. Enough socialization. I've had my fill. And I thought, what? I mean, can there be enough of socialization? And so he proposed a one night per weekend social calendar. And that was new to me.
So he just was really wired differently and wasn't as energized by being out with people as you were.
He was drained by it, And so he was willing to compromise on his end, but he was asking me to. And I was still, you know, starry-eyed and enamored with him. And so I just, you know, decided to do more without him socially. But then when we got married, well, it was really complicating things because, you know, I wanted to, as a new wife, I wanted to have dinner on the table, but I couldn't have our dinner ready and still take a nap. So I had to give up my nap. And then
big adjustment.
Oh, my goodness. And then I couldn't stay out late, and it was just cramping my style.
And as you made those adjustments, it began to affect your attitude towards your husband and to have some negative effect on your relationship.
Yes. Yeah. I was sort of resentful, and I was frustrated. And now that I had him, I loved him, but I was trying to fix him because I thought the problem was him. And there's one night that stands out in our early marriage where I was really frustrated with him and feeling like I needed to control him. We had been invited out to dinner by some neighbors to go to their house for dinner, and I was so excited. We were
got your social fix.
Yes. We were new in the area, and I was so concerned about making new friends. We didn't know anybody. We just started at our new church, and so we went to their house and enjoyed this wonderful dinner. Let me back up and say that my husband at this point was building his career. He gets up really early in the morning, 4:30 in the morning.
Okay. My husband does too.
Okay.
And that may explain why your husband wasn't so excited about late nights out with friends.
This is true. He was exhausted by Friday night. He had put out a lot that week, and so he was ready to wind down. So after dinner, when we went into the living room, we're having this wonderful, engaging conversation, and I look down at my husband, and he's kind of sitting on the floor next to me, petting the neighbor's dog. And when I look down, I noticed that his hand was just kind of like limp on the dog's back, and his head is kind of at a strange angle. And I thought, oh no, I think he's asleep. And so I just tried to start talking and being even more animated so that I could keep their attention. And I thought maybe they would just glance at him and think he was oddly strangely staring at their dog. But I tried to keep all of the focus on me. And then somebody asked him a question. And of course, I nudged him with my foot, and he kind of went, oh, and said something unintelligible. And so this beautiful evening with our new neighbors came to the screeching halt. They said, oh, you must be exhausted, you know, and ushered us to the door. And so there, between their driveway and our driveway, which is about five driveways, I packed a lot in. Mm. I started belittling him and criticizing him. I said, you embarrassed me. I cannot believe that you fell asleep in the living room of our neighbors. This was important to me. I said, from now on, mister, you are going to guzzle coffee every time we step outside the door. And, you know, I think that there was a lot for me to learn at that point. I was so fixated on his faults, or what I perceived as his faults. I think if I were to let God speak softly to me in that quiet moment, it wasn't so quiet because I was yelling, but if I would have let God talk to me, I think he would have said, you know what, this man is a good, godly man, and he is going to provide for your family and lead your family, but let's focus on you for a moment, because this desire that you have to take control of people and situations and make it all turn out right according to your little perspective of how Friday night should go, well, this is truly the problem, and I'm already bringing circumstances and situations into your life to help you work on this problem that you have with control.
And that was early in your marriage.
It was.
So as you continued to, you know, add children and other complexities of responsibilities and whatever, it got more complicated.
Yes. Yeah. When I was single, I just had my own safety, my own appearance, my own behavior to kind of control. Well, now I had five people whose safety and appearance and behavior, I was trying to control everybody, and my control issues were just mushrooming under this normal strain of family life.
And I'm sure you were just wanting things to turn out well, to turn out right for yourself, for your family, for your children. You talk about wanting a happy ending.
Yes, yes. I had this ideal for what my family should be like. You know, the kids should be well-behaved. We should all look cute, adorable. I wanted everyone to like my family. I wanted us to fit well into the groups that we were engaging in at church or play groups or wherever. And so I was trying to control all of that.
And how successful were you?
You know, I have lunged after control in hundreds, maybe thousands of ways. And I can tell you that I have never been able to maintain control. I've never been able to create this happy ending that I have in mind. I'm never able to keep everyone safe, keep everyone happy. It can't be done. And really, when I try to take control, I just interject pain. I interject strife. I interject misery. I sabotage my own idea of a happy ending by trying to control it.
And that misery probably goes two directions. One, internal, what it does to you. I don't talk about that in a moment, but also what it does to those around you. So what's happening inside of you as you're trying to wrestle control of your circumstances?
Yeah, frustration, anger, tension. And of course, that's feeding into all of my relationships with my children. There's frustration and tension in my marriage, frustration and tension. Now, for me, this was an in-house operation. I didn't let this seep out into other relationships. It was pretty private for me. But there was a lot of tension in our home. And I'm talking as though this is in the past. And, you know, I'm a recovering control girl. But when there is tension, when there is strife, when other people are pulling back from relationships or when they're getting frustrated, I think my advice would be look if you're trying to control where you shouldn't be controlling. For me, I wish I had looked there sooner.
You bought your little child at the time, maybe a two-year-old, a video control, what do you call that thing?
Video. Video game controller.
A video game controller, thank you, yes. When he was a little guy, except it didn't work. Why did you do that?
Oh, well, I didn't realize it didn't work, but when I got home, it didn't work, and I would have thrown it away, but I kept it because it solved this problem we were having. When the older kids were playing video games, the little one, Cade, was about 2 years old, and he was always trying to pry the game controllers out of their hands, and he was scratching them or biting them, and so with this broken one, they would settle him in his little beanbag chair and give him that one and say, oh, here you go, buddy. Here's your controller.
You got your own controller.
That's right. So he's pushing the buttons and he's completely content watching the screen.
Thinking he's making a difference.
Yes, thinking that he's in control. And isn't that such a good picture of us sometimes? Because we feel like as we see life playing out in three dimension around us, we feel like we're the ones in control. We feel like that we can control. In fact, we feel like it's all up to us to take control. It feels like the good and right thing to do. And yet there are these moments in life when God kind of leans low from heaven and dangles the itsy-bitsy controller cord in front of us and says, you know what, honey, you are not plugged in. You're not nearly as in control as you think you are.
It's an illusion.
Mm-hmm. It is an illusion. We don't have control, but it's also an invitation, I think, those moments, you know, when you recognize that you're not in control. Maybe it's when you get the word about the cancer, or you find out about your husband's unfaithfulness, or you find the suicide note or the drugs or whatever it is.
Or a child is acting out in a way that you can't control.
Yes. In all the different stages of life, there are things that we encounter that we cannot control. And I think that those encounters, they're invitations from our good Father who's saying, why are you heaping this burden onto your shoulders? Why are you trying to take control? Don't you recognize I'm already in control? You know, it's one thing to let a little kid go on with an illusion of a controller, but our God is too kind and too good to let us continue in this illusion as if we were in control. You know, he sees the stress and the anxiety and the frustration on our faces, and he leans down to say, you're not plugged in. You know, won't you give that to me? Won't you lay that burden on my shoulders?
And that really is a burden to try and control the world, right? Or the world around us. I have a friend, we all need this kind of friend, who would say to me, I mean, we've been really good friends over the years, and I'd be bemoaning something that was happening that wasn't according to the way I thought it should be, and how can I fix this? And just occasionally she would inject in that conversation, remember, Nancy, you're not God.
Mm-hmm.
You're not God.
Yeah.
And to have to remind myself again and again, I am not the Christ. It is not my job to fix the whole world or the people around me. I can't even fix myself.
Oh, I know.
I mean, I get so stuck in the things that need to be fixed, and then I'm helpless to change myself, certainly helpless to change others around me without the grace of God. And yet we would say theologically, those of us who've been around this teaching any length of time, I know God's in control.
Yes.
I know God's in charge. I know He's sovereign, big theological word. Mm-hmm. So why do we live like we have to fix it all?
You know, I counted one time in church how many times I either heard an individual or from the platform the message, God's in control. You know, a little group of friends, we were praying because an adoption was coming up, and a friend prayed, you know, God, we know you're in control. And so, and then the woman said, I know I'm not in control of this. And then we sang songs about it, and we heard it in the sermon. And then that day, I walked out into the parking lot, and I began trying to control my children. I remember on the way home from church that day, my son was talking about the fact that he didn't want to go to our youth group anymore. He wanted to go to a different youth group. And so, my control girl just kicked right in. Even though I had spent the entire morning affirming the fact that God is in control and I am not, why do we do that? Why do? I think we're not convinced that that's a good thing. I think maybe we believe it cerebrally, but we're not convinced that it's good that God is in control and it's good that we're not in control. And I think then that's just evidence that we don't believe in God's goodness. We don't truly believe in His faithfulness. We're not assured of His care for us and that He sees us and knows us and that He is intricately involved in the details of our lives. I think those are the things we have to remind ourselves of in order to surrender control.
And maybe we don't think He would resolve it quite the way we think it needs to be resolved.
Yes.
Which, how arrogant is that when you think about it?
It is.
That my way would be better than God's.
Yeah, well, and I think we're short-sighted too sometimes. You know, I just want to take care of my little life, you know, my little happy ending. And God has such a bigger, broader, more infinitely glorious to Him perspective of my life. You know, it's a story that He's writing, and it's all about Him. It's not about me. When I try to hijack it and make it all about me and my little story and my happy ending, well, that's when I'm not willing to surrender the things that I hold on to, that I don't want to surrender those to His greater purposes. So you're right, it's arrogance.
And surrender is a really important word if we're going to deal with this bent to control. Let me just back up a moment first and say, we talked about kids and parenting. Mm-hmm. You're not saying don't parent your children.
No, I'm not.
You're not saying let the kids do whatever they want to do. You're not, you know, you're not the parent. There's a balance there, right?
There is. Yeah, I think good moms do control their children. And so, but as they age, as they progress towards adulthood, well, we need to start giving up control, right?
Even when they're little, though, you can't really control the outcome of their lives, their health, their safety, you realize you're not God, right?
Absolutely. I mean, you can buckle them in to that car seat. Mm-hmm. You can keep them germ-free. And ultimately, we're not in control. And I think the sooner we recognize that, the better.
So how does surrender relieve us of the burden of trying to control the whole world?
I think surrender is the antidote. Surrender is just recognizing God is in control, and He's so much better at it than I could ever possibly be.
So it's a faith walk, really.
It is.
Trusting that God is watching, that He is there, that He's got the whole world in His hands, and that He knows how to deal with these issues and these challenges, and trusting that He will show me how to act and not to act in that situation, and being willing to wait on God to do something that I think needs to be fixed or changed now.
Absolutely.
And that may not be the way He wants to write the script.
Absolutely. Yeah. Surrendering to His timeline, to what He says is good, to what He is doing in the future that I can't see and that I don't know about. All of those ways, those are the antidote to me becoming a control girl.
Nancy DeMoss-Wahlgemuth has been talking with Shannon Popkin, author of Control Girl. If this title is intriguing, you can find more information about how to get the book at a link in the transcript of today's episode. You'll find that at reviveourhearts.com or on the Revive Our Hearts app. Now, if you're listening today and you're thinking, I am definitely a recovering control girl too, then we'd love to get your hands on another resource as well. It's Nancy's book, Surrender, The Heart God Controls. It's a whole chapter on practical ways to let go of control and live a surrendered life. Right now, if you make a donation of any amount to support Revive Our Hearts, we'll send you a copy of the book as our way of saying thank you for your generosity. To donate and request your copy of Surrender, visit reviveourhearts.com or call us at 1-800-569-5959. Before it's too late, be sure to check out our spring sale. We've got some discounted items that would make wonderful additions to your bookshelf, and they'd be great gifts too. Maybe grab something for yourself or a friend. You can shop the sale at reviveourhearts.com/spring sale. Tomorrow, Shannon will be back to tell us about some times when it was difficult to surrender control to the Lord. Please be back for Revive Our Hearts. This program is a listener-supported production of Revive Our Hearts in Niles, Michigan, calling women to freedom, fullness, and fruitfulness in Christ.